Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to More Than Amused Podcast, a podcast all about women and the arts, hosted by Stani and Sadie.
Join us as we explore what it's like being a female artist, examine modern day problems, and educate ourselves and you on important and forgotten female artists of the past.
Hi everyone, and welcome to More Than Amused. I'm Stani.
I'm Sadie, and wow, here we are. We actually kind of have a setup now.
Yeah.
Bear with us as we get used to it. Looking at the camera versus looking at the laptop and therefore looking at each other.
I know. You're probably going to catch us probably looking at each other a little bit more because that feels more natural. Mm. But we'll try to look onward every once in a while.
But also looking onward might be creepy, so who knows?
This is Winston. He's thrilled with the new setup because he feels like he can sit in my lap the whole time. So you're going to probably see him a lot more often.
Awesome. Well, we're going to keep on going in our Women in Rock Week. If mm-hmm. you've been listening throughout the week, you've probably, or month, I guess, excuse me, you've probably picked up on that. We started out the year with Stani talking about Stevie Nicks, so an icon, someone that everybody knows and loves. And then last week we had the opportunity to talk to the author of She's a Badass, Women in Rock, on feminism. Super cool. But today I get to talk about someone who is a lot more behind the scenes, which is like really the message of what More Than a Muse is, you know?
Definitely.
It's all about the people that we don't know as much. And so I was actually really excited when I was introduced to this person. So her name is Carol Kay. And when the name was like first told to me, I was like, Carol King? No, Carol Kay, different person. And I work at a music school. And one of the teachers was in the lobby and a parent was in there as well. And I don't know why it got brought up, but I didn't bring up, I have a podcast. I was so weird. Like,
you're good. It does come up more often than you'd think, actually. But I guess it's because like this is a normal routine of every person's
That's
life.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even though it is for us at this point.
That is very true. Anyways, but the other person who worked there brought up the fact that I have a podcast. And of course, the parent was like, what do you do? That's amazing. I obviously explained. We talk about women artists. And then he was like, well, have you done an episode on Carol Kay? No, I don't know who that is. He told me all about her. And then I was like, sweet. Now I have to do an episode on Carol Kay. Yeah. And then when we decided we were doing a Woman in Rock Week, I was like, well, this is
month.
Just perfect. Month. Oh my gosh, I keep saying week.
Yeah.
Month.
It's Women in Rock Week every week for January.
There we go. Yeah. So anyways, shout out to the parent of the place that I work for this tip. And the story is really, really cool. It is going to be a shorter episode than normal just because one, this person is still alive, but two, they're a pretty private person. Mm. Like they don't necessarily love fame or even have been chasing fame. Yet I felt like it was worth shouting her out because she is behind the scenes on so many songs that we all know and love that like we have to know who she is.
Yeah.
So without any further ado, let's talk about Carol Kay. So she is an American musician and she's one of the most prolific recorded bass guitarists in rock and pop music, playing on an estimated 10,000 recordings in a career spanning over 65 years.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. So yeah, 10,000 songs. Something that I want to define before we get started, if people who are listening are not well-versed in music terms, is a the thing I want to define is like a session musicianist or like a session player. Mm-hmm. And what those are essentially like the musicians that people will hire on just to come into the studio and play the song. So the song's already written, the song's already composed. You know what the song wants to be like, but you'll hire a bassist to come in and play it on the bass guitar lines, or you'll hire a drummer. So it's not like that they're not always actually writing the song or anything like that. They're just supposed to come in and do what they're told. Anyways, that's a session player. And that is what she had a lot of success doing. Okay, so for her early life, she was born in Everett, Washington, to actually other professional musicians, Clyde and Dot Smith. Her father was a jazz trombonist who played in big bands. In 1942, though, he sold a piano in order to finance a move to California. I will say, I don't think that her father was great. I think that they struggled a lot with money problems and maybe like abuse towards her mother as well as to her. But like music was the thing that united them as a family. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, they had music. And at the age of 13, she received a steel string guitar from her mom, and she actually began teaching professionally the following year. So after playing for 1 year, she's teaching professionally,
wow,
which is crazy. And
I could never.
Literally, I've been playing guitar since I was 12. Granted, I haven't been like, I don't know, probably playing as much as she has, but I wouldn't feel comfortable playing professionally. But something that I was interested in is like, I feel like people who look at musicians like, oh, you're going to be a musician when you grow up or whatever. People look at that as like a, oh, you're not going to make a lot of money though. You know, like that's like the stupid, dumb thing to do. But I feel like it's interesting with her. It's very clear that she started being a musician almost to make money, because she was like, okay, I know if I learn how to play guitar in a year, I'll be able to teach. And that was her job from the beginning.
I feel like people like underestimate how many different careers there are in the arts, because we even talked about this with the background singer, Starlene Love, and I can't remember her name.
Mary Clayton.
Yes. But how like you would never assume that you could be a professional vocalist without having to pursue a career that's like fame. True. And yet they were able to so successfully for so many years. Like there's a lot more careers than I think people realize.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And not even just like in music, but in the arts period. Yeah. The only way to be successful and make a living in a field isn't by being famous and being a household name. But I definitely think that's a very common misconception.
Oh, 100%. Especially because like I think saying the words, I want to be a musician, people automatically assume like, oh, you want to be famous.
Oh, you want to be famous. Yeah,
and it's
literally.
Like, no, maybe some people just want to play music. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to be famous either. But like,
true.
There's variety. Like you have choices.
Exactly. And like Carol's whole approach to music was so strictly almost like practicality of like she saw how her family was pursuing this. She knew there was a way to make money. She loved music. And so she jumped right on in and started making her living this way. So this is when she started playing sessions in jazz clubs around LA. So she's first and foremost a jazz musician. So she started playing in LA with groups called like the Bob Niels Group, with people such as like Jack Sheldon, Teddy Edwards, and Billy Higgins. I'm not as familiar with those names, but
me either. I'm sure they're great.
I'm sure they're great. I'm just not as prolific in jazz music as maybe I should be. But then in 1957, so she was playing a gig at the Beverly Cavern in Hollywood when a producer named Robert Bumps Blackwell invited her to a recording session for Sam Cooke's arrangement of Summertime, as in that song. It's like summertime and the living is easy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when she did this, she realized that she could make significantly more money with this session work than she ever could as a player in the jazz clubs. And so she pivoted and decided, cool, let's make this my full-time career. So again, it's kind of just like the practical approach. If this is going to make her more money, that's all she cares about. She still gets to make music. Now for all the songs. Okay, well, not all the songs. She played on 10,000. I'm not going to sit here and
like, are you going to list all 10,000 songs?
And now the remainder of the episode will be me strictly listing everything she played on. No. Anyways, so in 1958, she played rhythm guitar on Ritchie Valens' La Bamba, recorded at Gold Star Studios, Hollywood. And then she started working with the producer, Phil Spector, which actually it's funny that you brought up Darlene Love and Mary Clayton because their paths crossed a lot with Phil Spector as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, I feel like a lot of musicians crossed paths with him in the 60s, but, you know, just wanted to point out there's definitely some crossing lines here. And then she played electric guitar on Bobby Sox and the Blue Jeans' Zippity Doo Dah and the Crystals' Then He Kissed Me, acoustic guitar on the Righteous Brothers' You've Lost That Lovin' Feelin'.
Oh my gosh. I have never thought about that song in so many years, but I know every word.
Exactly. I feel like a lot of these songs, because they're songs from the 60s, it's like you don't think about that song. And then as soon as you do, you're like, oh, wait, I know that song perfectly. Yeah. Or like maybe you don't recognize it from the title, but I know if you were to go look that song up, you'd be like, oh, yeah, this song. I know this song.
Yeah, 100%. All of you have heard it at least once.
Exactly. Yeah. And she was the guitar player on a lot of these songs, which is really cool. So she started working with other musicians, including a drummer named Hal Blaine and a guitarist named Glenn Campbell. And then her work with Phil Spector attracted the attention of other record producers. And basically, she just found herself in demand as a regular session player. I want to point out that, like, she's known as a bass player, but on those original recordings, she was playing guitar. Mm-hmm. So in 1963, though, a bass player just failed to show up for a session at Capitol Records, and she was just asked to fill in on the instrument because they needed somebody to play it. And after that, she discovered that she just preferred to play bass and that she liked it more.
Okay.
What I liked is that she found it was a key component of a backing track, and it allowed her to play more inventively than kind of just like the more simpler mm-hmm. guitar parts that she was playing until then. I feel like sometimes people think that like bass is like playing the bass isn't very like it's not that tricky, but or I don't know. What is your take on the bass?
I was going to say this is really funny because over winter break, I ended up watching like mm-hmm. all of these bass guitar videos because fun fact, if I was going to learn an instrument, it would 100% be bass guitar.
I did not know this about you. That's cool.
I would love to, but obviously don't have the money and time right now. But I was like watching all these things and I saw someone compare it to like guitar is the melody, whereas bass guitar is like the rhythm.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that, like, if you take out the bass guitar of a lot of songs, it completely ruins the song. Like, you don't realize how much it's actually doing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I feel like people get the misconception the bass guitar is, like, five notes repeated like, over and over
boom,
again.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
When in reality, it's, like, a whole lot is going on with it.
Yeah.
And it's guitar like, is important, but, like, bass guitar kind of keeps the song on track.
Totally. It's, like, the grounding rhythmic work that drives the song forward, but also like just fills in that low end that you're right. Like if you might not hear it consciously, but if you were to take it out, you'd be like something's missing. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing with the bass guitar is, like I mentioned, she liked it because she could be a little bit more inventive mm-hmm. with what she was doing. And that's kind of how it works because they'll be like, oh, these are the chords, play it. But then it's sometimes up to the bass player to like figure out how they're going to connect those chords and like what lines to do. And so I think session bass players would maybe have to be a little bit more creative as opposed to like,
yeah.
I mean, granted, I'm sure there's times where they're like, no, this is the exact bass line I want you to play. But if you're playing for someone that's not a bass player, then they're like, I don't know, make it work.
No, like
you know?
You could make it sound better without them even really noticing probably.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Exactly.
Kind of fun.
Yeah, exactly. Another just reason why she preferred the bass, it was easier to carry a single bass than having to switch between three or four guitars depending on the song.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
So yeah, I don't know if she was in charge of bringing all the guitars, but there'd be an acoustic, electric, 12-string. They all bring different colors and different sounds. And so,
gotcha.
You know, but there's one bass, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, so there was another bassist named Ray Pullman, but after he left studio work to become a musical director, she became the most in-demand session bassist in all of Los Angeles.
Nice. And like,
Los Angeles, you know, there's a lot of music recording going on. So pretty significant.
That's a good position to be in.
Literally. She, though, did continue to play guitar as well. Some other ones that are notable is she played on several Sonny and Cher songs. She played on Frank Zappa's album, Freak Out. What she noted is at the time it was unusual for a woman to be such an experienced session player. Mm-hmm. But something that I thought was cool is that she never really remembered getting crazy like I don't know, sexism from that. Like, she said that she remembers sessions being generally good humors and united by the music, which I feel like she was professional. I imagine that the other people that they were bringing in were professional. They knew she was the best. And so they would just show up, do their jobs, get paid, and leave.
Yeah. So, there's probably a lot of benefit to session work too, where the pressure, I feel like, isn't as high.
Yeah.
And so people were able to be, I think, like, better versions of themselves probably. Yeah. Like,
or also, like, there's not really egos involved if you're a session player.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Because everyone who's there as a session player is just there to be hired on. They're not all there trying to become the rock star.
That's so fair.
So I'm sure that that was, like, easier dynamics to deal with as well.
Definitely.
So she was the sole female member of – okay, there was a group of musicians that were – the Wrecking Crew, and I'm saying that with quotations because she said that, like, the collective of musicians were never actually known by this name, but it was later invented by someone in the group named Hal Blaine. And I think that almost, like, he created that name for them as, like, a marketing ploy later to kind of, like, cement themselves in history. But, like, other people in the group thought it was hokey because they were just like, we never called ourselves that. Like, why are you giving us a name?
Yeah, that's funny.
But, you know, as far as the marketing aspect of it, I guess it was a lot more effective. But yeah, it was a collective of studio musicians who played on a lot of hit records from Los Angeles in the 1960s. And then, like I mentioned, throughout the decade, even though she was completely unknown to the public, she played bass on so many number of records that appeared on the Billboard Hot 100. And according to the New York Times, she played on 10,000 recording sessions, which is a lot of songs. Recording sessions.
Is there an artist who has 10,000 songs in their catalog?
Probably not.
Yeah, because I'm like, that's a lot of songs.
That's true. I wonder, like, what is the biggest catalog? An artist with the... Okay. This person says, the Sun Ra discography is one of the largest discovery in music history. The jazz keyboardist, bandleader, and composer recorded dozens of singles and over 100 full-length albums, comprising well over 1,000 songs and making him one of the most prolific recording artists of the 20th century.
See, that's what I was thinking. I was like, 1,000 songs.
Is the most. And that's, you know, a jazz as, like, themselves. So
yeah,
her playing on 10,000 recordings is more than...
I would assume
probably is 10 times artists. More than the this most prolific person who's released music.
It's like the top contenders are Bob Dylan, The Beatles, Elvis, and Frank Sinatra, which I think is, like, fair because they have quite a few, but definitely, like, they don't have 10,000. Can you guarantee 10,000?
I know. She appeared on sessions by Frank Sinatra, Simon and Garfunkel, Stevie Wonder, Barbie Streisand, The Supremes, The Temptations, The Four Tops, and The Monkees. So, you know, no name groups. Who are they?
Yeah.
She also played electric bass on Nancy Sinatra's These Boots Are Made for Walkin'. So that's just what I'll do. Yes. And she also came up with the introduction on fellow session player Glenn Campbell's hit, Wichita Lineman. She later said that during the 1960s, she would sometimes play 3 or 4 sessions per day and was pleased that so many of them hit records or created hit records, that would also please me.
3 to 4 sessions a day.
I know.
Yeah. That makes sense for 10,000 songs.
It's crazy. Throughout her work with Phil Spector, she caught the attention of the Beach Boys' Brian Wilson, who used her on several sessions, including the albums Beach Boys Today's, Summer Days, Pet Sounds, and Smile. What I thought was cool about this one, kind of like how I mentioned that something with the bass is that you oftentimes have to kind of work out your own bass lines. These sessions in particular, she had a lot more freedom to create her own and work out her own bass lines. By Pet Sounds, Wilson was asking musicians such as Kay to play far more takes than typical sessions, often running over 10 passes of the songs, with sessions stretching well into the night. Something I just want to know, if you're not familiar with the Beach Boys, that's fine. But Pet Sounds is kind of considered one of the best albums ever. Like, if you look up, like, what are the best albums of all time on any, I don't know, major music publications, Pet Sounds will be very, very far up there. So interesting. Just something to know. And also, you know the song Good Vibrations?
Like, yeah.
Picking up good vibrations. Exactly. She is the bass player on that and was really significant in how that bass line was created.
That's so awesome.
Shout out to Carole Kay. Okay, so as far as later work, so by 1969, she was exhausted, valid, doing 3 to 4 a day, 10,000 songs. I probably would be too.
Yeah.
And pretty much just got tired of doing session work, which I'm sure at a certain point you probably would feel a little bit cooped up in there. She said at one point that the music had started to sound like cardboard, which... valid. At the same time, what I thought was interesting is there were newer rock bands. They didn't like using session players because they would just prefer to play the instruments themselves. I feel like there's maybe like the, no, I'm more of an artist if I'm playing all of the music myself. Yeah. And I think now session workers in general aren't used, if anything, because it's not as cost effective. I mean, now if you're recording something, it would be awesome if you could hire a bass player, a drum player, and a guitar, but like with virtual instruments and things like that, you can oftentimes at least get the sound you want. And other thing too is like you can just record as many takes as you want until you get it right. So you don't need someone who can get it right in the first two times, you know? You can be a little bit more, I don't know, choosy in that way. So unfortunately, session players have a little bit phased out of the music industry in some ways because of those reasons. And so I think she just kind of moved with the times in that sense. I mean, coming in the 80s too is like the electronic drum kit and, you know, everything that becomes synthesizers and all that. So she decided though to make a change in her career, evolved it from playing primarily pop music to performing mostly soundtrack work, as well as writing and teaching. She wrote a book called How to Play the Electric Bass in a series of tutoring books, and then her soundtrack sessions from the time, including playing on the themes to MASH, the streets of San Francisco, and across the 110th Street. She also performed on soundtracks and had worked closely with someone named Lalo Schifrin playing on the theme to Mission Impossible and the soundtrack for Bullet.
Another thing you never even think about, but the fact that like the writers of the soundtracks aren't usually like, there's no singer, there's no star.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of instrumentalists.
Exactly.
Like, another career you would never even think about. And yet every movie has a soundtrack. Every TV show has a soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. And I think still it's still pretty common to have actual players, like actual orchestras and things playing in movie soundtracks.
Yeah.
If anything, just because the movies have the budget for it, so they'll do it. And I mean, there's just, you can't really beat an actual orchestra.
No,
and
definitely not.
In pop music, you can get away with like virtual string instruments, but if you're like wanting the sound of an orchestra on your movie score... If you have the money to do it, you will just get the orchestra. So anyways, she also regularly collaborated with Quincy Jones, later saying that he, quote, wrote some of the most beautiful themes I've ever heard in my life. And she was a part of Jones's orchestra at the 43rd Academy Awards. So what I thought was cool is that she collaborated with Fender. That is a guitar bass music company to produce a lighter version of the Precision Bass, which was her instrument of choice for a really long time. And I think the idea was a lighter version so that it wouldn't be like put as much strain on her back and it would be a little bit more comfortable to play. And this is funny. In one interview, she said that she believed at the peak of her session activity, she was making more money than the US president.
Probably true. I don't think it's actually that hard to make more money than the president.
I don't know how much the president makes, to be honest.
Probably a lot, but I would assume like Taylor Swift is making more than the president.
US president. That's valid. That's very true. Some styles of her picking. So something about her that's maybe unique as far as bass players go is that she uses a pick on both guitar and bass, but it's normally common on the bass to strum it with your fingers, but she uses it. She also typically muted her bass using a piece of felt on top of the strings and in front of the bridge that would kind of reduce unwanted overtones. And she said about that, for 25 cents, you could get the best sound in town.
Wow. So, that's very awesome.
I know.
Why is it such a thing about using a pick?
I don't know. Well, I think that some people who are bass players would say that, like, you're only a real bass player if you play with your fingers, or you know what I mean? I don't know if it's like looked down or if it's just like, no, the right way to play it is with your fingers. And also maybe like, I know a lot of times when you're like plucking, you can like use both fingers. And so it's like,
Oh, okay.
You can just maybe,
so it's probably a different sound,
do like faster rhythms or anything, because you can use both fingers to pluck the bass as opposed to just like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure both work, but I know that's like a debate.
I know. I'm like, is it one of those things that's like, well, you're not a real this unless you do
that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She has achieved such critical acclaim as truly one of the best session bassists of all time. And I'm just going to read some of the nice things that people said about her. Someone named Michael Melenda wrote in Bass Player Magazine, which I love that there's a Bass Player Magazine, said that Kay could listen to other musicians and instantly work out a memorable bass line that would fit with the song, such as her addition to Sonny and Cher's The Beat Goes On. Paul McCartney has said that his bass playing on the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Club's Band, another very prolific big deal album, was inspired by her work on Pet Sounds.
Wow.
Allison Richer, writing in Bass Guitar Magazine, has called Kay the first lady of bass playing, adding that her style and influence are in your musical DNA, kind of addressing all bass players. Her solo bass line in Spector's production of River Deep, Mountain High was a key part in the song's Wall of Sound production, and that recording is now in the Grammy Hall of Fame. Quincy Jones said in his autobiography, said women like Fender bass player Carol Kay could do anything and leave men in the dust. Brian Wilson has said that Kay's playing on the Good Vibration session was a key part of the arrangement he wanted. Quote, Carol played bass with a pick that clicked real good. It worked out really well. It gave it a hard sound. And then Dr. John has said that Kay is a sweetheart as well as a kick-ass bass player.
Nice.
So, oh, this is something interesting too. So obviously she's very, very, very admired in the music world. It's kind of like if you know who she is, you know that she is a very, very big deal, which I feel like is maybe the ideal situation, to be so well known and well loved in your field, but like nobody outside of it knows who you are. Yeah. So you can move freely. I feel like that is the best situation.
Definitely. Can shop at the grocery store, but is still getting paid like really well.
A lot and very of money.
Respected. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. She never, though, like I said, really expected to be well remembered. And at the time of her sessions, most of the players, I thought it was crazy, thought pop music would not really last longer than 10 years.
Interesting.
So they thought it was all a phase. And so she's really surprised and honored that people still will even listen to the tracks that she's played on. I didn't know this, but have you ever watched or seen the Amazon series, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
We've talked about it and I've seen the previews and stuff. I just haven't sit down and dedicated time. So
no, that's fair. I only watched season one, but apparently there is a character that arrives later, I think season three, that was based off of Carol Kay, which is cool. Really cool. But Carol Kay herself has described the character as, quote, having nothing to do with me or my history. They took a few things out of my book and created a character that's not even me at all. So whatever. But hey, if you're watching that, just know it's very loosely based off of her.
Yeah.
And then in 2020, Rolling Stone magazine ranked Kay number 5 in its list of the 50 greatest bassists of all time, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
I did find this interview article that came out. It's just from a blog. I think it's just blog.musicman.com. And it was an interview with Carol Kay. And she's still alive. And she just turned 85 last year. I think actually last February. So we're coming up on her birthday. Or no, wait. March 24th is her birthday. So she'll be 86 this year. But it was an interview with her. And I wanted to read some of the questions they asked her along with some of the answers, just because I feel like it really does a good job at, I mean, obviously it's in her own words. And I feel like at the end of the day, what's better than getting her experiences in her own words? But I think it also really shines a light on just who she was and what her priorities were. So from his name's Ernie Ball. He asks, out of all the parts that were good, what do you think your favorite part about working as a studio player was, other than, of course, the money and supporting your family? And she said, the money, the respect, and it was a union. If we didn't have a union, there wouldn't have been no 60s, because, I mean, no rocker was good enough to cut their own records back then. It was a union that backed us up and provided stable, good pay and respect. It's all about respect. Musicians down through the centuries have been slaves of kings and barons and all of that stuff. we were slaves. We weren't even first class citizens. But here I was in the studio making as much as a doctor and being treated like a doctor too. I mean, really respected. That's big, you know? You see these rockers get up on stage and ruin it for themselves with their drugs and their harsh talk and all that. Fun is fun, but there comes a time when you gotta straighten up if you want to make money. You have to be professional, and that's what I'm all about.
I love that.
Again, I think that like really shows like she was very, very practical in her approach to things, and her goal was to support herself, support family. She obviously loved music, and she did what needed to be done and found a situation that really, really respected her and thrived in that. About just fame, and then like I mentioned, she had her friend that created something called the Wrecking Crew. But she says, now I'm a teacher and I'm a player, and you don't live on fame. Fame is phony. It's like a prison. You know that one star that called it that? She was right. It is a prison. You have to be careful about that, and that's my take on it. We've always been known as studio musicians, and the 50 or 60 of us were called the clique. Once in a while, they'd say, let's call the clique. Let's get them booked. So they were a group of people, but not the Wrecking Crew. And they all thought that was very hokey. And then, okay, this was just cute too. He kind of says like, by the way, March 24th is your birthday. To which she says, can you believe it? I'm just glad I can still play. That's the wild thing. I can still play and I can still teach. He asks her, do you have any big plans? No, no. I'm just glad to go to bed and wake up. Just teaching and playing bass. That's the fun now. I've got my fun. It's fun to pass along what you've got because I know what it's going to do for them. It's going to make them happy. We're the ones who make others happy. And what could be better than that?
Oh, wow.
She just has such a reverence for her instrument as well and for what she's doing. And this is the last he asked her if there's any like parting advice or parting words, to which she said, you've got to put music in your life. Force yourself to listen to music and to cool out. Get out and hear some musical groups and notice that the real feelings that come into your life. We're all trying to pretend that things don't hurt or don't matter. We're trying to pretend and put a good face on. That pretend stuff gets to you after a while. It's phony. Music is not phony. When you play music, you're expressing your inner being in a way that you're going to touch someone else's inner soul too. It's something deeper than anything you'll ever do. Keep in touch with music because it will take care of you. That's my advice. Which, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, especially as a musician, I'm like, you know, love hearing that. But I just thought that advice can be applied to literally, I mean, obviously all arts of just, we're all trying to pretend that things don't hurt, don't matter. But like, no, you should lean into your art. You should lean into those things because at a certain point, you won't be able to fake it. You know, you can't hide behind it. It's not fake. It's not phony. It's real. It's there. And when you have that ability to touch other people with your art, like, don't hide from that. Take it, own it, and embrace that as opposed to hiding that, you know? And I think that's such a beautiful way that obviously carried through. And I think it's so cool that, like, now, like, she's a teacher, she still teaches. She's, you know, late 80s. And the fact that he was like, oh, are you doing anything fun? And she's like, yeah, my fun is my life. I get to play bass and I get to teach bass. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's really, really incredible.
No, and, it's, you know, so fun, like, hearing people like this. You can tell they just, like, ooze, like, humility and, but pride in their work. But, like, the ego hasn't really gotten there. Like, but she's definitely one of the best. And, like, she knows it. But then she's just like, yeah, like, you just live it. And that's how you are. Mm-hmm. It's really incredible.
And I agree. Like, and I think we talked about this when we did the background singers episode, where there's nothing wrong with wanting to be the star. There's nothing wrong with wanting to put yourself out there. But then at the same time, there really is something beautiful about the people who are okay with being in the background and totally comfortable with being a starring role or a supporting role. And I remember that was something that maybe some of the background singers felt frustrated by, where they're like, this wasn't my plan B. Like, I'm not a bitter would have been, could have been star. Like, this is what I wanted to do. And I'm very, very happy and fulfilled doing this because I get to sing, which is what I love to do. And I get to have all these amazing experiences. Why would that be something bad and sad? And
definitely.
I think that's, again, it's just like, it's so nice when it's like there's people who just like love the art and love making it. And that's enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
It is. It's beautiful. And I think it's a part of like the musician career that gets overlooked a lot. Uh-huh. Like both background singers and, you know, musicians, that it's like they're so essential to the process. Like mm-hmm. one person, even if they're writing the lyrics and the music, they can't get up on stage and perform all of it. They can't go True. Into the studio and like do everything all of the time, you know, like mm-hmm. there are essential people that are a part of that. That it's really cool to remember that.
I know. So there is Carol Kay. Like I said, it was a very short story. There was a little bit of information about her personal life. I think she's been married a couple times, has a kid. But like, it almost felt weird diving into that because it's very clear that she doesn't want to be a public yeah. person as well. And so I was like, you know, I'll respect that. We don't need mm-hmm. to mention that.
No, I like where we've headed. If she wants her music to be the focus, we can do that for her too.
Exactly. That's mm-hmm. what I figured. I'm like, she yeah. is not being very vocal. And there was like, even on the Wikipedia page, there was like 3 lines about her personal life. And usually, you know, things are public knowledge, so you can find things. But it's like, all right, I don't think she wants this to be yeah. shared. So no, I respect that. I respect that. But anyway, so there's Carole Kay, one of the most prolific session bass players ever. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it. But now I hope that you go. I'm honestly like wanting to go listen to, my plan is to listen to Pet Sounds.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, I know the song Good Vibrations. It's a great song. So go listen to those songs.
There's some good ones on here. There's Wouldn't mm-hmm. It Be Nice?
Yes, exactly. Wouldn't
God
It Be Nice?
God Only Knows. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know these songs.
It's like you said, it's those songs that like you don't think about. And then when someone reminds you, you're like, wait, I know that song.
Yep.
And she is the bassist / guitarist on many, many of these songs.
You know, there is a Carole Kay The Best Of playlist.
Ah, there we go.
That someone has put together. So if you do want to, this one is made by Matthew Ditta 1999.
Perfect.
So if you want to go and listen to all of her bass guitar.
It's right there.
Yeah, there's a couple of playlists out there, but that's the one that pops up first. So
incredible.
Yeah.
Well, amazing. Thank you for joining us for our quick episode this week, but we'll be back next week with our mm-hmm. last week for Women in Rock, and we're just talking about honestly a lot of women.
Yeah,
we'll be shouting them all out, and
we're covering
I'm
a lot of people
it.
This month.
I know
it's exciting, but it yeah exciting. And then we're just excited for the rest of the year. Always good things planned. Hopefully mm-hmm. this new setup is good and we'll continue to kind of mess with it. And True. I mean, like, bonus, if you watch the YouTube video, you get to see my dog pop up every once in a while.
True. So. And we're going to make it cuter too. Also, mm-hmm. I'm moving to an apartment in like 2 months and I'm very excited about it. Well, to a new apartment mm-hmm. because that one has like a window.
Yeah.
Right now, my setup is right by my bed because I'm in a one bedroom apartment. So
it's
excited
okay.
for my two bedroom.
It happens. I know. I'm yeah. like, I've got 2 ring lights and a window. So I'm very well lit. But
yep.
we'll get there.
We're yeah. figuring it out. But
yeah, definitely.
All new in the 2024. So yes. join us next week. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to follow on Instagram, subscribe yes. on all of your platforms, follow us on TikTok, subscribe on YouTube, you know,
all the things.
We're everywhere. We'd love to have you here as well. And we'll see you next time.
Yay.
Bye.